Financial regulations front and center.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis. 20 minutes into the trading day, let's check and ask that question, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up about a quarter of a percent. Same for the Dow, up about 21 points, 10,206. The NASDAQ, pretty much flat right now. European shares are higher as well, anywhere from 0.2% all the way to nearly a percent. And Asian markets closed mixed today. Former Fed Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker goes before the Senate Banking Committee later today. He's going to defend President Obama's proposals for bank regulation, stricter controls on bank risk, and a more traditional banking model. Julie Neiman is analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis this morning. Good morning, Julie. Good
morning, Steve.
So the president's trying to rein in the banks, and profits for these banks could obviously be affected by all of this. Can this idea in the Congress have any traction?
If they sell it right, because the key here is it's not about size, but about risk. Investment banking really is a risky business. It's not banking. There's high returns, high risk, and high salaries and bonuses that go with it. But the traditional banking function is conservative. It's lending on a commercial side, on a real estate side, and understanding if the person can pay you back. So the two should be separate because it's all about risk.
What do you say, Julie, to the average person who feels like nothing ever gets done in situations like this? I mean, we have these bank bailouts. Corporations seem to always win. They have the lobbyists. They have the money. They have the power. What do you say to somebody who's thinking like that?
Well, you're right. When the immediate crisis passes, amnesia sets in. And then you have all the PR people talking about how we need to go back to the old model. It wasn't really broken. It just needs a little bit of tweaking here. At this point, though, Obama stands a really good chance of getting serious bank reform by bringing up the difference between the two. And the fact is, every time you have huge bank mergers, they don't amount to anything. Nobody actually makes any more money. The University of Chicago did a study on that, basically saying that when you merge all of them, the only one measure goes up, and that's CEO salary.
There you go. There you go. Julie Neiman. All right. Thank you. We appreciate it.
You bet.
If corporate earnings are any indicator, we got a snapshot of where the economy is headed from UPS today. Profit at the shipping giant fell more than 9% last quarter, but the company did better than analysts expected and predicted a strong year. Marketplace's Amy Scott is with us live from our bureau in New York. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So what does shipping tell us about the overall economy?
Well, if the economy is doing better, people ship more stuff. Carrie Leahy is with Decision Economics. He says, in general, the shipping and transportation industries have been improving.
The nice thing about UPS is it's a little more broad-based, so it's picking up not only businesses shipping to retailers, but people shipping back and forth to each other. So it's a little broader measure that things are doing a little better.
UPS says shipping was strong during the holiday season, and it expects profits in the coming year to increase by anywhere from 17 to 32%. That said, though, UPS announced last month it's letting go of 1,800 workers.
So the cost cutting continues. All right. In this latest round, Amy, of corporate earnings, analysts have been wanting to see actual revenue growth, not just cost cutting. How's that looking?
Right. Well, Leahy tells me that overall, three out of four companies have reported better than expected earnings, and that we are seeing more of that revenue growth, companies actually bringing in money. But revenue at UPS fell 2.5% last quarter, so it's still a pretty mixed bag, or should I say box.
Marketplace's Amy Scott reporting live from New York. Amy, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2010 at marketplace.org. Finally, a little bit of positive news about healthcare. A study published today in the journal Health Affairs finds that more money for community clinics has meant more treatment for the uninsured. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How are you guys?
Okay.
How are you?
For the last 9 years, Gene Dupree and his wife Jacqueline have had one primary care doctor, Dr. Tim Lehman.
And this is the best your blood pressure has looked in a long time. So that's really good news.
Layman tugs at a stethoscope hung around his collar like a gym towel. He works for the Esperanza Health Center in North Philadelphia. It's one of 1,200 federally funded health centers in low-income neighborhoods. Centers reduce expensive hospital visits by focusing on preventive care and community outreach. A new study published today reports that community centers are also more effective than many hospitals at channeling federal money to the uninsured. Professor Anthony Lasasso at the University of Illinois authored the study.
For every dollar that they receive in federal grants, a little over 25 cents of that dollar essentially goes to uncompensated care.
Dr. Layman says that uninsured patients can feel so stigmatized that they don't seek care until the last minute, and it's often in a hospital emergency room. He says it takes a familiar face to gain people's trust.
A trust level develops that allows people to feel that they're being seen as a person, taken care of as a person.
Which means that when Layman tells them to lose weight or take their heart medicine, they're more likely to listen. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Replacement parts for Toyota's faulty accelerator pedals could start arriving at dealers as early as today. As Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, the pedal problems and recalls have been tough on dealers.
John McElhaney's been busy lately, though not in a good way. He owns a Toyota dealership in Clinton, Iowa.
We've had probably more people than normal coming in, but obviously a lot of them are questions about their present vehicle, not to purchase another one.
McElhaney's been talking to customers whose faith in Toyota is faltering.
A young lady, 21 years old, just bought her first new car from us a few weeks ago, a new Toyota Camry. She was just very disturbed about this, and was her car safe, and did she make a good buy?
He told her the sticky gas pedal problem's rare and offered to check her car on the spot. McElhaney, who's also chairman of the National Auto Dealers Association, says dealers must get repairs done quickly to keep customers loyal. McElhaney predicts dealers can recover all their lost sales by the end of the year. That'd be good because the hit to Toyota from repairs, idled production, and liability is already estimated at over $1 billion. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Tonight's the premiere of the final season of Lost. It's sort of a cross between Dostoevsky and Gilligan's Island. Now, the plot involves a bunch of castaways trying to solve a constant stream of puzzles, and that makes it a little tough to follow. Not a formula that's typically thrived on television. So what's the magic behind Lost? Here's Marketplace's Jeff Tyler.
Instead of dumbing down the show to reach the masses, Lost borrowed from cable TV's business model and cultivated a small but devoted audience. Joe Adalian is TV editor for TheWrap.com, which covers the entertainment industry. He commends ABC for setting an end date for the show.
Too often TV shows sort of linger on well past their actual expiration date, and the product quality definitely declines. Fans sort of get disinterested.
The series will end in a few months, but Adalian expects network suits will milk it for years.
ABC and its owner Disney sort of see Lost as a much bigger property. I think they see it as a long-term franchise, not unlike, say, Star Wars or Star Trek, that can live on for 20 or 30 years.
Not everyone wants a sequel. Fan Ryan Ozawa likes the finality of the series.
It's going to be one great package, an epic, basically, that we can study like the Iliad for the rest of our lives.
For fans who don't like to study, there's also talk of turning Lost into an amusement park ride. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Technically, the recession may be over, but people working at a lot of local courthouses don't seem to be feeling it. Jay Field reports.
The mortgage crisis has hit the Chicago suburbs especially hard over the past year. In Lake County, north of the city, a surge of mortgage defaults has doubled foreclosures in some middle and upper middle class communities. As a result, Associate Judge Mitchell Hoffman with the 19th Illinois Circuit Court in Waukegan ended up with scores of additional cases.
All the foreclosure cases would come into courtroom 302 on Wednesday mornings.
But before too long, Judge Hoffman found he couldn't handle them all by himself.
And we would have to have two or three other judges pitch in with the call and send cases down to every courtroom on this hallway.
We're talking hundreds of people every Wednesday morning crowded into this small hallway. So court officials began sending all undisputed foreclosure cases to a smaller traffic court nearby. Daniel Hall with the National Center for State Courts says the scene has been repeated in courtrooms across the country as the recession claims victims on a broad scale.
Not only did you have the foreclosure cases, but you have contract disputes that have gone up 37%. You've got assaults and family cases that are rising in states like New York. And so you have a cumulative impact of these kind of cases flooding the courts, you know, at the same time when budgets are being cut.
In Illinois, officials are struggling with a growing stack of unpaid bills and a deficit projected to top $11 billion this year. State courts face a $21 million budget cut. Next door, in Iowa, that state's chief justice warned of assembly line justice, where cases could get short shrift.
The big risk is that you're going to have people losing their homes
who might otherwise have been able to keep them. Some states are trying to consolidate and restructure their court systems, but no amount of restructuring is likely to spare more homeowners and lots of other people already in pain from more. In Waukegan, Illinois, I'm Jay Field for Marketplace.
In Alaska, there aren't a whole lot of groundhogs, so the legislature last year passed a bill calling today Marmot Day. So now they have their own version of weather rodent there. Just think of all the Marmot Day marketing possibilities. Maybe a Bill Murray movie in the works? I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online at marketplace.org. You can get the podcast there, too. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.